Chesley's legal strategies made him a legend. He became one of the country's most powerful class action lawyers, but his career ended in disbarment. He died November 2nd at the age of 89. How will he be remembered? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss Stan Chesley's life and legacy are WCPO9 I-Team reporter Dan Monk, former Local 12 troubleshooter Howard Ain, and author of the book Fat Chance, Rick Christman. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you.
A note for listeners, Stan Chesley's wife, Judge Susan DeLotte, is a member of the Cincinnati Public Radio Board of Directors. Dan, tell us a bit about Stan Chesley's early life. He didn't grow up in a wealthy family, did he?
No, he did not. He was the son of Russian Jewish immigrants, grew up in Avondale of humble roots. I know he sold shoes for a time, putting himself through law school. His daughter, Lauren Chesley Miller, told me he actually had three jobs as he was putting himself through law school. He was a tireless worker. She said he was a maniac, but he believed in what he was doing.
Uh-huh. Howard, the case that really made him famous was the Beverly Hills Supper Club fire that killed 165 people back in 1977. You reported from the scene of that fire. Do you remember talking to Stan Chesley in the days and weeks after?
Absolutely. And he was really very interesting. He filed a lawsuit like nobody ever did before. It's now called a class action mass tort lawsuit, and he developed it. He, instead of just suing, you know, okay, the Supper Club, let's sue the Supper Club and maybe one or two others. No, he didn't. He sued 300 different firms. Like, okay, you know, most people did not die from the fire. They died from smoke inhalation because they were still inside the club, couldn't get out, and they died from smoke inhalation. What was burning? Well, the chairs, he told me. Chairs were burning. And then where was the smoke going? Crowded in the room. It was just making a big cloud of smoke, and the people breathed in that smoke. And so he sued the manufacturer of the chairs, among many others, 300 different companies he sued. Mm. And he collected $49 million, which was quite a lot of money back then, for 281 claimants.
Mm. Yeah, I can remember interviewing Stan Chesley years ago, and he had some of the foam from one of those chairs in an envelope in his desk, and he pinched off. He pinched off a little piece of the foam and he set it on fire in an ashtray and said that the smoke coming from it had cyanide. That was part of what.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really a terrible, terrible fire. Rick, talk to us more about this, essentially this new way to approach the case that Stan Chesley invented and the impact it had.
It was called industrial liability. And among the industries he sued was the aluminum wire industry. And, you know, no one knows who made the wire that caused the fire. So he sued the entire industry.
Well, and Dan, didn't his daughter tell you he was a bully, but not in such a bad way?
Yeah, she did. She said that he used it for a good purpose. And that is, you know, kind of true in his career. You can see where he scored these huge multi-million dollar settlements and sometimes billion dollar settlements over time because of his persuasive abilities, his power to negotiate, and his reputation sort of preceded him. And among the cases he litigated was the Fernald Nuclear Processing Plant, which resulted in a $100 million settlement in 1989. He was involved in the group that got a $3.2 billion settlement for people harmed by the Dow Corning breast implants, $200 million for Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange. And he was, of course, on that team of litigators that secured the $206 billion settlement from the tobacco industry in 1998.
Wow. So, Rick, did it just mean something for a case to have Stan Chesley's name attached to it? I mean, did his reputation precede him in such a way that were people quaking in their boots when they knew he was on the other side?
Oh yeah, no doubt, and that's why they didn't want to go to trial. He basically mediated most things.
So I guess he had to be a pretty good negotiator too.
He was a pretty good litigator too. This year I did a story about the Bengals and how they became billionaire owners, or the Brown family became billionaire owners. And I went back and reread the lawsuit that Stan Chesley filed against the team. And just reading how he questioned people in court was just fascinating. It really was. I had heard over the years that he was, basically forceful because of his persuasive power and the way he intimidated people. But he actually did ask some really sharp questions. And I thought it was fascinating just to see him in action, or read about him in action by reading through this massive trial transcript.
He became so powerful that a lot of the real famous lawyers, from California, they came to Cincinnati to be with him. And that's why a lot of people he became a national figure.
So, Howard, you're saying they just wanted him on their team, huh?
Yes, absolutely. And his help. That's right. You know what's interesting? In probably the early 80s, he came to me and he said, I'm famous all over the country, but not in Cincinnati. I said, really? He said, no, not in Cincinnati. So what I did was I did an interview, long interview with him. I divided it in two parts, and he was on two different days. And he said, that was great. Now people in Cincinnati knew him.
Wow. It's hard to imagine ever a time when people in Cincinnati didn't know Stan Chesley, but I'm sure it was there. Dan, here in Cincinnati, he was also known for contributing money to help keep the city pools open longer in the summer. Can you talk about that and some of his philanthropic side?
Yeah, I interviewed former Mayor Mark Mallory, and that's the thing he remembered most about Stan Chesley. One year he raised money to keep city pools open after he won a case to force that, and donated his $80,000 fee to the effort. And then in subsequent years, he would, present checks for $200,000 one year, $250,000 the next. And Mallory also told a story about how he would just find people in the newspaper and call them up and offer to represent them for no fee. He told the UC magazine that he considered himself a champion of the underdog, and he considered himself the people's lawyer, and that was one way he exhibited that, according to Mallory.
Well, Dan, didn't his daughter tell you about some more personal philanthropic efforts of his too, in terms of, people in restaurants and stuff like that?
Right. She said he would show up at the precinct on prom night and pay everybody's bill as
really?
One example. Yeah. Yeah. And, my favorite story was how he would show up at a swim meet for his granddaughter and sit there for 6 hours to watch her swim for 30 seconds. And scream loudly as any proud grandfather would. But it just, the thought of Stan Chesley in a hot in a hot environment watching his granddaughter swim and cheering her on just kind of warmed my heart.
Yeah, definitely. And I imagine he had a little bit more time for his grandkids in that regard, maybe, than he did for his own children when they were younger.
Yeah, that is one thing that Lauren Chesley Miller said. It's, he wasn't like that as a father, but as a grandfather, he was special.
We're talking about the life and legacy of Cincinnati lawyer Stan Chesley. He died November 2nd at the age of 89. His children say he died after a lengthy battle with dementia. Well, Rick, so many people have all these warm memories of Stan Chesley, but I do want to talk to you about the case involving the diet pill Fen-Phen that ultimately ended his career. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. he had a great reputation, as has been said, and there was everybody remembers what Fen-Phen was, right? The diet drug.
You can remind us a little bit for the younger folks out there.
It was a combination of two different drugs that if you took them in tandem, you would it would an appetite suppressant that wouldn't make you sleepy or nervous. It was extremely popular, and particularly in Kentucky, it was popular because you couldn't buy it in Tennessee. So anyway, all these diet doctors got into it. It was just enormously popular. It was found to perhaps cause heart damage. There was a case for that. So a class action suit was put together it would be held in Philadelphia. There was a plaintiff management committee, and Stan was the head of the plaintiff management committee. So he was in a very influential place. But he was put against the wishes of these three other attorneys who had formed and somehow managed to get a certification of a much smaller class action lawsuit in Kentucky with the connivance of a judge, which I won't go into. And so the settlement normally would have been about $25 million. Well, after a short period of negotiation, it ended up being $200 million.
And then was part of the allegation also that not enough of the settlement went to the plaintiffs, the people who actually were harmed by the drug?
That's right. And then, unfortunately, his three other partners decided that $60 million was not enough. So they arranged with the connivance of a judge to take he agreed to a settlement of $100 million. What they didn't tell the judge, supposedly, is they'd already taken $60 million, okay? And so what they originally hoped to leave the plaintiffs with out of $200 million was only $45 million.
And as I understand it, ultimately, two of the lawyers involved went to prison. Stan Chesley was disbarred in Kentucky and then retired in Ohio before any disbarment proceedings in Ohio.
And what really got him in trouble is Stan really got involved in trying to help these other three attorneys cover their tracks, okay? And he did he was supposed to represent the interest of these plaintiffs, and clearly he did not. You know, he was not acting in their best interests, and that's why he was disbarred.
And didn't the other two lawyers involved in Kentucky, did they end up going to jail or prison? Am I remembering that right?
Two of them went to prison. And one that everyone remembers, he was acquitted because the jury agreed that he was too drunk to know any better. And so they let him go. And another interesting thing about this, these two attorneys, well, they put them all into the county jail, at the Boone County Jail, okay, because they were flight risks. And while they were sitting in the Boone County Jail, their horse won the Dubai Cup.
Oh, my goodness.
There's a lot of interesting stories here.
Yeah.
But you asked me about Stan Chesley. That was his undoing. He, I don't know why he would do, he just.
Didn't seem
to
like
have more
him.
Money, Anyway.
Well, but he had many, many cars. He was a collector of cars. He sold his place and I think Avondale. And he moved over to a bigger house. And that was a big surprise to me.
Yeah. Well, Howard,
and that's not the Stan Chesley that I knew and that I worked with, not at all.
It was a foolish thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
A foolish thing. The legal fee would have been $60 million to share among the four of them, but that wasn't enough. They pulled this other scheme and tried to get away with giving the plaintiffs only $45 million out of the whole $200
million. Mm. Wow. No
and wonder. It hasn't, most of it hasn't been accounted for.
Even now?
To this day.
Wow.
Well, Howard, we've talked about a bunch of different facets of Stan Chesley, and there's no doubt he lived this incredible life, the son of immigrants. He worked all these jobs to put himself through law school. He ended up winning billions of dollars in settlements. He befriended a president. Right. He was famously friends with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. What do you think his legacy is, Howard?
Well, you know, and look, when they came to his house, as they did several times, he met his wife and, oh, by the way, you're a federal judge now because of Clinton. I mean, just they were very close. And I can understand that because when I worked with him, I got very close to him. I was in his house many times. This is before he moved. It was a wonderful, wonderful guy. So this other part, you know, I wasn't in touch with him at that point. And it was a big surprise what he would remember. Still, the Beverly Hills Supper Club. I mean, he set it. Nobody did what he did. He set the way that all of these lawyers to this day still handle major cases.
Yes, it's taught in law schools to this day.
Wow. Yeah, it's a big deal.
Dan, what did Stan Chesley's daughter, Lauren, say about how his family will remember him?
They said that they will remember him as a father and a grandfather and a person who loved deeply. You know, one of the things about Stan Chesley that I think makes his story resonate so much in Cincinnati is that we love our heroes. And we love them, whether they have frailties or not. You think about all the heroes we have had in Cincinnati that, you know, maybe fell short. You've got Pete Rose, Bob Huggins,
yes.
Hard Shot.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a big contingent of Cincinnatians who love all these people and celebrate them still as heroes, even though they may have had faults. And I think that's the one story of Stan Chesley here. He achieved a lot. He achieved greatness, and he was a human being.
Well, I have been talking with WCPO9 I-Team reporter Dan Monk, former Local 12 troubleshooter Howard Ain, and author of the book Fat Chance, Rick Christman. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.